Coming up on Windows Weekly, Mary Jo explains seashell to those of us, me included, who don't know what it is yet. Plus, Apple is trying to become more like Microsoft, while Microsoft is trying to become more like Apple. We talk about squiggles and stickers in Skype and a whole lot more Windows news. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode number 521, recorded Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. Seashell by the seashore. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all websites. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/windows. That's wordpress.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you are getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. Welcome to Windows Weekly. This is the show where we talk all things Windows. Leo Laporte is on vacation this week, so you've got me. But of course, you've got your regulars, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your Windows wisdom with us, Mary Jo.
Wow. Wit and wisdom.
Windows wisdom. That's www.
Yes, wit and wisdom. Yeah. And Mary Jo, you just got back from Japan. You had posted some lovely pictures. How was it?
It was really good. I had a great time. I barely worked, which was unusual for me on a vacation. So that was good.
What devices did you bring?
I brought the HP laptop that I've been using and my Android phone, my Nexus 6P. And that's it. And no other devices.
And they both worked okay?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was using Paul had talked up Google Fi, which is a networking service you can use overseas and not pay exorbitant charges for. And so I use that with Google Translate, and it was really great. Both made the trip way easier.
And Paul held down the fort for you.
He did.
Yep.
He did.
Did you have a lot of jealousy at all the Instagram pictures, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this to Mary Jo last week, but, you know, the big difference for me, because she went to Japan before and she's been to, what, like Thailand and, or Vietnam,
Cambodia.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because she can get online now, she can post photos, you know, so I, you know, when she goes to these awesome places that I want to see, it's always like, well, take some pictures, you know, and it was just great that she was able to post them. So I had to live vicariously, for that time.
They were perfect, and there wasn't, you know, there wasn't the kind of annoying, like, hashtag love my life, hashtag.
Yeah, not feeling like she blessed. Normally does.
Yeah, not you.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Yeah. Super annoying.
All right, we should get into the Windows news. Let's start with Windows 10 and Seashell. Mary Jo, you wanted to talk about Seashell, and I'm sure everyone watching this except me knows what Seashell is. So in case there's other people that don't know what Seashell is, maybe you could tell us first what it is.
Well, I'm not sure everybody does know, because it's kind of a new concept. There's been a lot of back and forth about it on the web over the past few months, I guess. I think it was Windows Central who wrote the first story about it, but Seashell stands for Composable Shell. At first, some of us thought it was Cloud Shell, but no, it's Composable Shell, and it's basically an evolution of the Windows Shell. So the Windows Shell, as probably everybody listening to this podcast knows, is the part of Windows that handles a lot of the system's management parts of the operating system. So things like the start, activity center, settings. So that's what Shell is. So Composable Shell is this new version of the shell that Microsoft's been building that is going to make it easier for them to have a consistent shell across all the different flavors of Windows 10. you know, we know that Windows 10 has the Common Core right now across all the different versions, like the Xbox version, the HoloLens version, the Windows Phone version. But what it doesn't have is the Common Shell across all of those. And this is what this C Shell effort is all about. The reason it's interesting, there's a couple reasons it's interesting. One is Continuum, as Microsoft's described it with Windows Phone, doesn't really work that well right now. But based on some of the recent leaks from leaked builds, it looks like Continuum's going to get a lot better because of C Shell. C Shell's going to let you have more consistent things like context menus across all the different versions of Windows now, which I guess you don't have right now if you have Windows Phone, fast app switching. So a lot of the things that Windows Phone has been missing are going to be coming to it thanks to C Shell. And if you've been following along with all the rumors about what Surface Phone or whatever the next Microsoft mobile platform is going to be, C Shell is one of the pieces of this that's going to make it possible. So we don't really know what the operating system flavor is going to be in whatever's next for Microsoft. My speculation is Windows 10 on ARM with C Shell on top of it. But whatever it is, C Shell is going to make this, give Microsoft a way to try to come back in some form in the mobile space. So that's why you should care about C Shell and know what C Shell is.
Microsoft sells C Shell down by the seashore, that kind of thing.
I was going to try to say that, but I knew it wasn't really.
And I can't even speak normal sentences. This kind of reminds me of two things. You know, there's the componentization work that Microsoft did in Windows back in the Longhorn days, and then has, you know, improved over subsequent versions of Windows. And then there's also this notion of this the Fluent design system, you know, this new user experience that they're working on for Windows currently,
right,
that has been inspired by 3D or mixed reality experiences, where instead of, you know, simple mouse over effects, you get light bleeding through and you get these, it's kind of inspired by real world objects, I guess is the way to put it. And it seems like this is like that, like both of those things, but for the shell, you know, that this is a way to componentize Windows in a new way that will help it on different device types, different form factors. And hopefully even on PCs, it will result in a more modern look and feel as well. I mean, this is the one part of Windows, kind of like the Mac, where it really hasn't changed much in, I mean, forever, 20 years, 25 years. Right. It's been a long time.
Yeah. And so I always joke that this Fluent design language, I seem to be inept at actually understanding it and seeing it. Like when people put up a picture, they'll be like, look at Fluent. Doesn't that look great? And I'm like, does it look different? I don't know.
I'm just not a design person. Subtle. It's subtle.
Yeah. Subtle changes. Yeah.
So as long as you brought up Surface Mobile, is it time to talk about the rumors of a Surface phone, but Surface Mobile is what it might be called?
Yeah. Here we go again. Another rumor. This is a rumor that came up this week thanks to our buddy The Walking Cat, also known as H0X0D on Twitter. He found a Chinese website that had supposedly captured something that Microsoft in China displayed very briefly that said, this is Microsoft Surface Mobile, which is a horrible name, by the way, and hopefully just not real at all. But he and some others were translating the text of one of the leakers who found this, and it mentioned Continuum. It mentioned Snapdragon as being the processor. It mentioned two things that look like new code names, Surface Peking and Surface Slavonia. And it also mentioned something called Onto Table, which people are interpreting to be projecting from a phone onto a table instead of onto a large screen monitor or a TV.
So
the question is any of this real? And even the most enthusiastic sites are kind of doubting it. They're saying, I don't know if this is real. It looks kind of fake, looks made up, looks Photoshopped. There isn't a picture of the device, but even the wording and the logo don't really match up correctly. So they're like, is it real? I don't know. I've been trying to track down, is it real? Is any part of this real? And my answer is, so far, I can't find anybody who knows or who thinks it is real.
This seems to have come straight out of the conversation that you and I had, some months ago on the podcast. And it was you who said, we keep thinking of this thing as Surface Phone, but you felt that, and I don't remember if this was an opinion or based on some information you had from sources, but that this thing would be a different kind of mobile device. And I think literally you coined the term Surface Mobile as maybe a more accurate way to describe it. So Mary Jo's email address is MJF at...
Oh, man. I think whatever Microsoft does do in mobile next is going to be probably a device that can be more than one thing. Like we keep hearing, maybe it's a phone. Maybe it's a tablet, right, that has telephony capabilities. But what's interesting about this rumor from this week is it never mentions telephony at all. And it makes it look more like it's a phone that can transform into a tablet and then use Continuum to transform into another kind of experience. So I don't know. When I saw the rumor, the first thing I did was go back and look at one of those envisioning videos that Microsoft used to do. I think the last one they ever did was 2015, where they show their glimpse of the future. And there are a whole bunch of pictures in there of people holding something that looks like a phone. And kind of making a gesture like they're sending it to something, and then it shows up on the wall or it shows up on a mirror. Yes.
Is this the one where it looks like a really flat thing? Like the phone is like almost like just the screen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the rumor is kind of reflecting an evolved version of that idea.
By the way, that's a very visual version of this notion of ambient computing, right? That if you think about a home that has a Google Home in it in each room or something, and you could walk around the house and talk to it, and you could extend that out into the world. But of course, you often need something to look at, a screen of some kind. And so today, Google's talking about, well, we're going to use your HDTV. If you have a Chromecast, we can use your phone because everyone has one of those. But this... I mean, I'm surrounded like literally by blank walls in here. I mean, it's not hard to imagine casting a screen, a display or whatever you want to, projecting a display up onto this empty surface.
Well, that's what the name Surface almost always implied, that even from the beginning when it was something, you imagined larger,
right?
Just that every surface could be a screen, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, if Microsoft Surface is successful, the Microsoft Surface devices will go away.
Mm. Every Surface becomes a Surface. That could be their new tagline.
Yeah.
What about, some people in the chat room are saying, what about a Surface Mini? Is that something that you've heard rumors about? No.
And by the way, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that one kind of periodically resurfaces the whole idea that remember when Microsoft was going to build a Mini? Surface Mini, and then they built a bunch of them and then put them down. I'm saying it's like an animal. They put them down. Yeah, actually, I was thinking they buried them in a big hole somewhere.
Oh, no, it's chasing rabbits on a farm. It's fine. I think that's a little short-sighted to worry about that kind of thing at this point, right? Like the very notion of Microsoft coming out with a phone or a mini tablet and putting a Surface logo on it right now is way out of date. I think the thing that's most interesting about what Microsoft is doing here, and we don't know much, is that they're clearly thinking along the lines of something new. Like this is something we've not yet seen, right? And there's some value to that, right? Without knowing what it is. I mean, there's no value to making a phone now. That makes no sense for Microsoft. Right. There's absolutely no value in making a little Surface tablet. There's no value to that. But, trying to advance the state of the art, trying to make this little Envision video come to life in a way that actually makes sense in 2017, 2018, whatever. I mean, that makes sense at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying, that it's, you know, aspirational and future forward thinking. But what about, yeah. I mean, the Surface Studio, what value did that have? I mean, it was a giant tablet that they were really pitching at artists. And then couldn't you also pitch a smaller, you know, something slightly bigger than this for artists and people who want to be productive, like the, you know, people who think of it as like a Moleskine Surface?
Yeah, actually, like so you just said the key word. I was going to kind of almost not jump all over that, but kind of Microsoft's thing, the one bit of the market that makes tons of sense for them is that productivity thing. You know, when they use the term creators with the creators update or the fall creators update, what they're really describing there, it's another way of saying people who are engaged in productivity tasks. They're creating something, they're making something, they're whatever it is. And so the Surface Studio is the embodiment of that kind of a task for certain types of creators. In this case, they tend to be on the artistic side. Whereas, you know, other Surface devices target traditional productivity tasks, but they're still creating content. You know, when Terry Myerson first said, you know, everyone's a creator, it sounded a little goofy, like, oh yeah, sure, you know. but literally, I mean, we are, and by we, I sort of mean Microsoft's customer base, because traditionally, it has been productivity workers, it's been businesses, it's been doers, as they sometimes call these people. It's a better term. It's kind of a more modern term than like knowledge worker or whatever. It's also a broader term.
Yeah. I didn't mention this, but the rumor from this week about the Surface Mobile had it having a pen as part of the device, whatever the form factor is. And what else did it have? It had a hinge that could flex 185 degrees,
like connect,
I believe.
Almost like connect two of them or something and have it be like a clip-on courier type thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that kind of plays into that idea of this being something they could say, well, it's for creators. I mean, there's a pen, right? It's not just for artists, but for anyone who needs a pen or wants to use a pen.
Whatever.
Yeah. Note takers, yeah.
I'm still a little leery of this notion of devices that can do too many things at once, you know, that... Mm. By nature, depending on how you approach this market, you're going to do one thing pretty well and one thing not so well at all. You know, if you think about a Surface tablet type device, so far these things have been pretty good computers and not so good tablets. You know, an iPad so far has been a really good tablet and it's okay for content creation depending on what you're doing. You know, especially if you need to type a lot, it's not necessarily ideal for a lot of people, but both of those companies and both of those products are moving more toward the middle. And maybe at some point they reach this inflection point or whatever, where they actually become good. I mean, you know, so it's hard to kind of judge this thing. We don't really know what it is. But the thing I like about it is at least they're looking forward and trying to do something new and trying to advance things, not just, hey, Apple made a thing. Let's go make a thing like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. They keep saying that if something has Surface as the branding, it has to have something that differentiates it in some way and that has a value proposition that's not being addressed by its OEMs. So if they stick with that promise, that's where they're going with this, right? Like nobody out there is making a mini tablet with a pen that can use Continuum. I mean, unless you count the HP Elite device, I guess. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, where it's kind of going in that direction. But I think they're trying to show OEMs the way.
A problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, these things should always be aspirational and not just for customers, but for partners so they can build their own devices. And just for the whole ecosystem, you know, that the more exciting Windows is as a platform, it's one of those virtuous cycle things where developers will get excited about the platform and want to take advantage of it, and users will, and you know, those things will hopefully feed each other.
Mm-hmm. So Microsoft inadvertently leaked a build this week.
Yeah, this is the opposite of aspirational.
Accidental.
Yeah.
So what happened?
I don't know. That was kind of a surprising event, right? Mm-hmm. Like what happened? So June 1, Microsoft teased late in the day, East Coast time, that they were about to drop a new PC build and a new mobile build for insiders. And so we knew it was going to come around 6 p.m. our time. And all of a sudden at 6 p.m., they pushed builds, but they were the wrong builds. They started pushing out internal test builds for PC and mobile that were further ahead in the numbering series than the builds they had told us they were going to push. And it turned out they were just not the right builds. They were internal only. And people started downloading them accidentally in some cases, or purposefully in some cases, on their PCs and their phones. And it didn't go so well on phones. People's phones were being bricked. They were in endless loops. They had to go and reset their phones if they got this on their phone. It was kind of a fiasco, I would say.
Yep. Yeah, it was. No, not kind of. It was a fiasco.
It
was. Yeah, it's the awesome GIF that Raphael posted.
I know, that was great.
I have a theory about this, and the one thing that I've kind of been complaining about with Windows 10, or I should say one of the things I've been complaining about with Windows 10, is all these versions, and not just, you know, creators update, fall creators update, but just the many channels or rings now that they call them, where I just don't understand how human beings at Microsoft can keep track of all this stuff. The sheer complexity of this to me is just overwhelming. And I think that this might be an after effect, or, you know, evidence of that being the case, that this is actually maybe a little too much. Like, it seems like there are these software switches that someone clicks to make a build happen. And if you screw one up, you know, it turns into a Stephen King story. And I'm actually kind of surprised this doesn't happen more often.
Mm-hmm. How often
has it ever happened? I know. I can't remember if it's ever happened before.
Not like this. I mean, they've definitely shipped builds by mistake. They've done it on phone and on PC, actually, to certain subsets of the population. And that's the thing. You know, when you have a tiered system where these guys get this and these guys get this, but there's like 27 of them, I mean, sometimes you're going to hit the wrong matrix and the wrong build's going to go to the wrong group, you know, whatever. And most of the times this has happened, it's been very small, but this was basically the build version of an apocalypse. I mean, it was, especially on phone, because I believe what those guys got was a build of Windows 10 something that was not for phone. It was for IoT devices. And that's what bricked their phones. Right. And then you have to go through a recovery process, but, it's tough. I mean, it's a tough one.
So the good news is that we learned about some secret features. The smart home hub, is that something that you knew about before?
I mean, we had heard about this feature, but we hadn't seen it in any builds. And Raphael got one of the builds that was leaked inadvertently and found it. It's in there. So this is a feature that's meant to make Windows 10 devices like a clearinghouse for family information, right? So, and also to do some smart home control stuff. I think it was Raphael or somebody actually got more details on this, I think, from the build. And it said something about a new brand that's coming, Windows at Home. So for all the people who think Microsoft has totally abandoned the smart home market, it seems like they have not. And the smart home hub is going to be key to that. And it seems to be coming in the fall creators update based on this leak.
Yeah, that makes sense timing wise.
Yeah.
There's also a control center interface, which works like it does on iOS, you know, kind of a shade that comes up for various quick controls. In Windows 10 today, that's built into the Action Center, which is typically used for notifications. So they're going to split those two things out. And we've heard rumors about that for a while, but Raphael found that it was actually in the build as well.
Mm-hmm. So the smart home hub, would that be, I mean, what device would you have that on? I mean, would it be like a Surface? Would it be like a kind of a speaker? Would it be on the Harman Kardon thing? How would you imagine controlling it?
Well, I would probably be in all those things in a way, right?
I'm sorry.
I mean, obviously Windows is going to provide you with that kind of richer interface. We can go in and check boxes and do things, but if you think about how any of these digital assistants work, whatever devices you have around should work. And the point of the integration is that you set it up once probably on your computer, but then you can, using your voice with a phone or a speaker or whatever, say, hey, Cortana, turn off the lights, or, you know, whatever little themes you've set up for that and whatever types of devices you have.
Everybody listening to this is now in the dark.
Oh. Yeah, sorry about that. well, no, they're not, because Cortana doesn't do that today. So,
right, not yet.
not yet. So, I mean, Apple has, what's Apple's thing? Is it HomeKit or something like that? And
right, yeah.
Their version of that, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah. Or the HomePod is what they just released. But what you're saying is Microsoft's not going to get involved in the hardware here. Probably they're going to rely on the OEMs.
No, yeah, yeah.
We think.
Yeah, those guys can write skills for Cortana.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and you know, at Build, Microsoft talked about this thing called Project Roam, which they had talked about at Build previously. And so Project Roam is like what Apple has that's called Handoff. So it's going to let you pick up and continue various scenarios, but I think it's also going to let you do things like control home devices that are hooked into this home hub. So if you've got things that are in proximity, you'll be able to say, you know, through your Harman Kardon speakers, say something like turn on Xbox, you know. So I think it's all related to this home hub idea.
Yep.
Were there any other secret features revealed in this accidental leak?
I think it was just the
seashell,
two.
Right?
Oh, seashell.
I think the seashell stuff was in there that we talked about at the beginning. But yeah, there's probably more. I'm sure Raf and Co. will keep looking into those leaked builds.
right.
So, Paul, you say enough with the SKUs, Microsoft. What do you mean by that?
I've been saying this for years. You know, at some point, they're like rabbits. You know, they start multiplying, and it seems like a good thing. And then, you know, you can go back to it. Really started in XP, but Windows Vista was the one where they came out and said we're going to have, you know, 5 or 7 SKUs, whatever it was. And then the antitrust stuff happened, and we had 2 more SKUs from that. And they'd started doing it in Office, and it just creates all this confusion. You know, one of the really nice things, if you think about Office 365, for example, although, you know, I know they have multiple versions of the subscriptions, but that when you combine products into like one offering, it gives you this one big thing you can update together, and it's a cohesive, nice whole thing. You don't have to worry, well, wait, do we actually have this one product, or do we only have these other two? And Windows features are just like that. And if you think about how Apple does things on the PC side of the Mac, they have Mac OS X. That's it. And they have a version for server that they don't really talk about anymore, but they do still have it. And that's what they have. Microsoft has 2,000 different product editions now. It's ridiculous. And they all, you know, you need a grid of features to understand what's different. And those grids are never complete anyway. And this week, there was a leak that Microsoft is apparently going to make yet another version of, or another product version, a SKU of Windows 10. So great. Like, I just don't, it seems to me like licensing accomplishes this, that if they just had something called Windows 10, first of all, they should never split it up into these many different sets of capabilities, but you could have 2 or 3, it'd be okay. I don't understand why people in school or workers in an office or an enthusiast at home need different versions of Windows. It doesn't make any sense. Does it make sense to charge them a little bit differently? Yes, absolutely. But, you know, if you go up and buy a Surface device today, for example, or some accessories, you'll see a price for that thing. And then you'll see a separate price, for, you know, a separate price for students and enterprises who are engaged in volume licensing schemes, pay a different way. And they also get different capabilities because of who they are and how important they are to Microsoft. So that's fine. None of that requires different versions of Windows. It seems odd in this day and age to still be doing this, you know. Apple, actually, to use another Apple example, they have iOS. And when you have a new iPad Pro, or an iPad, I guess, you get additional features in the same operating system. They don't have iOS Pro. They just use the same operating system. The features are just exposed accordingly. It's simple. You don't have to have different versions. I just don't understand. I've never understood this.
Let the record show that I have not mentioned iOS once, but both of you have.
We have a secret deep love of iOS here at Windows Weekly.
So we didn't actually say the name of the SKU that leaked. It's called Windows 10 Pro for Workstation PC.
No, I refuse to name it. Don't say it.
Yeah, which is like such a mouthful, right? Windows 10 Pro for Workstation PCs. It's like, and then it says on the leaked slide, name name not final, placeholder for now. Thank God, right?
So it's going to have more words, that the final name. One.
Yeah.
I mean, and look,
you know, I'm sorry. So I'm going to play a little devil's advocate with you on the SKUs.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to say that Microsoft should have a million SKUs, but I remember a lot of people liked Windows NT for workstations. And when Microsoft kind of did away with that idea, people were saying, you know what? There is a class of people who are power users who want a version of Windows that's more tailored to them, that has higher performance, better file sharing. So maybe this is that. Maybe this is that coming back. Or as Walking Cat posted up, I think, just a little while ago, somebody told him the advanced PC SKU is just rebranded Windows 10 Enterprise.
Oh, jeez. Well, of course, so that's the thing. Just like Windows 10 Education is just rebranded Windows 10 Enterprise. I mean,
so maybe, but maybe the words Windows 10 Enterprise go away. I don't know. Like maybe this takes the place of Windows 10 Enterprise. I don't know.
Right.
The other two that leaked, I know. The other two that leaked were about server, right? So one of them was called Windows Server RDSH, which people are like, uh-oh, here comes another version of Windows Server, right? But I saw someone from Microsoft mention on Twitter that RDSH is Remote Desktop Session Host. Mm-hmm. So that's what that stands for. Does it need its own version of Windows Server? I don't know. But maybe it does. This person said maybe it does because it needs a full GUI. And maybe it'll just be, maybe it won't be a version they actively sell, but if you need it, you'll be able to somehow access that version. I don't know. So
Microsoft has too much complexity everywhere. The build thing is tied to this naming stuff, brand, whatever these things are, SKUs.
Yeah.
Like seriously, it's like they can't back away from this.
Yeah. And then, you know, there was that rumor too that Windows 10S will replace Windows Home at some point. That will go away and this will become the new version of Windows for the low end. We don't know if that's going to happen. They haven't said that it will, but right. Hopefully they're thinking what we are, which is more doesn't mean better, but maybe they're just changing up some of the names. I'm trying to be an optimist here.
I just think there's a simple way to handle all of this stuff. You know, you describe these really high-end computers that maybe researchers in a college might use or extreme gamers might use or high-end video editors might use or whatever. I mean, you can expose functionality and figure out a way to charge people for it if you detect that hardware or give them a place in the operating system just to check some boxes and say, yeah, I want to use this stuff. I mean, I don't know. this is not the direction things are going. Like, you know, if Microsoft made a car, you know, to do the common joke, it would look like the inside of an aircraft carrier, right? But that's not the direction things are going. They're getting simpler. And this stuff is just kind of flying in the face of the way the world is. And it's so old fashioned and weird.
Yeah.
Well, so an example, Windows 10S. I mean, how would you handle what they wanted to do with Windows 10S without creating a new SKU? Or how would you do that?
Yeah. Well, because you can set certain defaults on a PC as it ships out the door. And, you know, Windows 10S right now, you can basically check a box. For now, you don't pay a fee at all. It reboots and you've got Windows 10 Pro. That stuff is in there. It's not something you're downloading. It's on the disk. It's already there. You can turn it on and you can turn it off. You know, like it doesn't have to be a new version of Windows. It's not you haven't bought a motorcycle. You bought a car and you're balancing it on two wheels and pretending it's a motorcycle. It's really not something all that different. It's just a configuration change. No, I mean, obviously, if this thing is successful, the goal is to quietly remove that technology that is oh so necessary today. And it's a valuable course to go down. It's a good idea. But people who use Windows 10S in the beginning, you know, starting with this Surface laptop or whatever devices, are essentially going to be experimenting to determine whether they can even do this right now. And I think for most people, the answer is going to be that they can't. But it's a choice. You know, you could... right now, as an individual, just say, well, I'm not going to install any Win32 apps. You know, there's even a setting in Windows 10 that will prevent you from doing it, sort of. It will give you a little warning. Like, you know, you can enable that right now in Windows 10 if you want to. Nobody does, because why would you? But I just think it's very confusing. It's more confusing to give people all these choices, rather, you know, as at buy time, you know, where you can just turn options on and off at any time. I don't understand. Yeah. I really don't understand the need for this. At server for Office, which is going away anyway, really, and for Windows on the client, it makes no sense to me.
So this week you also had a meditation, Paul, on Windows 10 file history, a look back.
A meditation, some retrospection.
So some mindful thoughts on Windows file history. Tell us about
actually,
that.
So yeah, this is actually one of those other new things that had changed in that leak build, right? So someone went to set up file history, which is a backup type thing that's built into Windows. That is never, it's never been enabled by default. It used to be called previous versions. And they were told that this was no longer supported, and that, you know, probably if you did it with an upgrade, you could probably bring it forward. But it was one of those things they're deprecating and getting rid of. And I you know, why would Microsoft get rid of a fairly core, if mostly unused, backup feature? And I think it's tied to this stuff that's happening around the Fall Creators Update, because that would, of course, be the timing for this, where they're bringing one drive placeholders back into the file system under a new name, you know, OneDrive on, what do they call, Files on Demand. And it actually makes more sense to replicate files along with the history of those files, meaning you're editing a document and so it looks like whatever it looks like at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, but now at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, you've made other edits and it's a different version, if you will. It saves these versions. It makes a lot more sense to do that in the cloud, right? Because that way it works everywhere on every single device. And so file history today is specific to that one device. If you do file history against documents or whatever today, it's on that device. That's the only way, the only place you really get to use it. A lot of people have pointed out to me that there's a significant amount of work to be done before OneDrive could handle this because, for example, OneDrive already does do file and versioning replication, but it only works with certain document types. In fact, I think it only works with Office document types right now. So they would have to fix that, obviously. It would have to become more of a universal type thing. But I think that's for the same reason that cloud computing makes sense for so many things, it makes sense here as well. It is literally the, let's put this thing where it belongs. And instead of someone with multiple computers having different sets of file history backups everywhere, put them in the cloud and make them on demand. They don't have to be on your computer. They're just there when you need them. And I'm not basing this on anything other than this makes sense. You can poke little holes in it if you know a lot about this stuff and you know how or where OneDrive doesn't meet this need. That's an absolutely fair thing to point out. But I think that they're improving OneDrive, and I think the goal here is to get to this point. And I do think that that's why file history might be going away. If not now, then in some future version.
So there's been a lot of talk about Windows 10 on ARM, and you had a great piece this week about how we'll know if it's
more
working.
Ruminations.
More ruminations.
Well, a lot of people have been asking about Windows 10 on ARM. Like, what? Microsoft never really talks about it. You know, build happened, and they didn't talk about it. They put up a video on the website that was pre-recorded that just, oh, yeah, look, here it is. It's, you know. And at the recent show, the Computex show, there was a little bit of, there was a session and some other information about Windows 10 and ARM. And I was kind of watching it and I realized, you know, we're so excited by this because it's ARM. You know, it's so new and different and, you know, whatever, except that it's not new or different. It literally is just Windows 10. It's, if this thing works properly, this will be the most unexciting, most boring thing that's ever happened, because it's literally like just getting a different PC. You know, they're going to be optimized for the kind of thin and light type of computers. They're not going to be workstations or game, you know, type PCs, of course. But ultimately, we're talking about Windows 10 Home, Windows 10 Pro, same exact features, same exact apps, desktop apps, store apps, just It's not like they're going to have little fins on them and stuff.
The LTE, built-in LTE eSIM is like the most exciting part, right?
Yeah, but that's coming to Intel too. Like these always connected PCs are not just ARM. They're also going to be on Intel. So if you want that capability, I mean, depending on what PC makers do, you'll be able to get it on Intel. In fact, actually, if you look at the list of PC makers, more of them are supporting it on Intel than there are on Qualcomm.
Yeah. Right, I think not that many people have committed. Not that many companies have committed to building PCs using ARM yet.
Right. I think that changes over time.
Yeah.
But in fact, I think Windows 10 on ARM will be more successful, especially in the short term, than Windows 10S will be. Right. And Windows 10S will be on ARM. It has nothing to do with ARM. I mean, other than that, it will be one of the things you'll be able to get there. But it's not reliant on ARM. It's Windows 10S is not only on ARM. And, you know, this always connected PC thing is also not always on ARM. It's on Intel, too. So the point is simply that if it works, if it actually works like they say it do, like it does, if you could run Office apps full speed, it's, boring.
It's just going to be Windows, right?
It's gonna be, just going to be Windows just running on a PC.
Well, you weren't the only one ruminating this week, Paul. Steve Ballmer has some regrets. And we also are going to talk about Kaspersky versus Microsoft. But first, I want to take a minute to thank the sponsor of Windows Weekly, WordPress. If you've been around, if you are a former blogger, if you've created websites, you've surely heard of WordPress. They are a great website that can help you create your own website and more. They're a community. I use WordPress for my website, meganmaroney.com. They were a great help, super easy. I did not want to spend a bunch of time messing around with stuff. I know a little bit, but just basically I know enough about web design today to get myself in trouble. So I was really glad to use WordPress. So whether you're looking to create a personal blog, a business site, or maybe both, you can make a big impact when you build your website on WordPress.com. Even if you don't have the experience building a website, WordPress can guide you through the process. They have hundreds of themes to get you started. Just pick a template and then make it your own. You'll get a built-in search engine optimization tools and social sharing. When you build your website on WordPress.com, you're part of a community with support 24/7 when you need it. I had some specific questions about my website, about search engine optimization, and they had some really great practical advice. I'll share some of it with you right now. Post often and make good content. So that was some good tips for me, although I'm not really sure how I can find the time to post often. But when I do, it's really easy with WordPress. And more websites are run on WordPress than on any other platform. And if you try it, you will see why. 27% of all websites run on WordPress. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. So go to WordPress.com/windows. If you're listening right now, don't forget to add the Windows at the end. We want them to know that we sent you there. And then create a website and find a membership plan that's right for you. You can create stunning websites, WordPress.com/windows. And just for you, because you're listening right now, you can get 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support of Windows Weekly. Kaspersky v. Microsoft. What's the story there?
Here we go again is the story.
Yep.
I know. So late last year, Kaspersky filed a complaint with Russia's anti-monopoly service, saying that Microsoft was unfairly competing against them because Windows Defender is built right into Windows 10. And they said they had a whole list of complaints, but also Microsoft wasn't giving them enough time as a third-party antivirus vendor to test because of the way they're now updating Windows regularly. They're basically trying to get Microsoft to unbundle Defender is my guess what the end goal is. So this week, Kaspersky filed two more antitrust complaints, one with the European Commission and one with the German Federal Cartel. That both of these sound pretty much identical to the Russian complaint. Microsoft is saying that when Kaspersky filed its first complaint. Quote, we reached out directly to Kaspersky a number of months ago, offering to meet directly at an executive level to better understand their concerns. But that meeting has not yet taken place. So they're claiming Kaspersky is ignoring their request to meet. Kaspersky is just moving forward and saying, you know what? We want a level playing field. You can't get rid of Defender. It's, I'm sure, impacting their business. And that's that. I don't know what's going to happen with these complaints. I don't know, you know, if there'll be monetary damages that they're trying to get, if nothing will happen, if other vendors in the security space will pile on. I don't know what's going to be next.
This is a tough one because they're both so wrong. You know, Microsoft wanting to keep Windows safe to me makes tons of sense. It's customer friendly. It's the right thing to do. You can't really argue with that. Kaspersky makes very specific complaints about Windows 10's behavior, and they're good points. As it does in so many things, Windows 10 is overly aggressive about this kind of stuff. Antivirus solutions or security suites are things that most people don't really like. And the very notion that Microsoft would kind of beat up on this kind of company is something that a lot of people not only don't care about, but they almost would rally behind. I mean, which is kind of weird in its own way. And I don't know. The issue I have with this is that this reminds me of the privacy stuff. And I have a feeling these guys are going to find a very willing audience in the EU in particular, because when it comes to antitrust, what they care about in Europe is about maintaining competition. It's not about protecting consumers so much as it is protecting the competition. And making a level playing field in Windows for third-party AV falls neatly into this category. And it's a little alarming because the last time the EU did something like this, we got the ballot box. What do you call that thing? The browser ballot box. More recently, we got the privacy controls in Windows 10 Creators Update, which I refer to as privacy theater because they're absolutely worthless. But they meet some stupid governmental type requirement. And, you know, in that case, it wasn't it probably wasn't a competitor that brought it to their attention. But they always seem to be pretty willing to listen to complaints against U.S. tech companies, don't they? Over there in the EU. I mean, it's a fact. So this one has the chance to be damaging.
Mm. Well, there's maybe they'll have dinner. Maybe they'll have that
maybe
dinner.
Maybe they'll have dinner. Yes. Yep.
I mean, isn't it safe to say that they've been struggling since, you know, the browser wars, like the, you know, anti-competitive, mm-hmm. you know, antitrust sure. through the browser. But I mean, is it disingenuous for them to say, like, we just want people to be secure? And this is different than, you know, making Internet Explorer, you know, the default browser. We want people to be secure. And the only way we can do that is to install Windows Defender and turn it on sure. and not be able to remove it.
So I think that part of it is very defensible. The issues, though, that they raise are that Windows 10 actually acts actively to make the situation worse for third-party AV in ways that are unnecessary. They put up confusing text for the user. They hide notifications. They make the user think that it's incompatible. They don't provide the OEM or the partner, in this case, the time to actually test the software in the latest version of Windows. It sometimes wipes out this software when you do an upgrade from one version to the next. And you just get a notification when it's over. This is, oh, by the way, we removed this thing because it wasn't compatible. And if you're not really paying attention, you'll just be using Windows Defender whether you meant to or not. And you might be paying for this other thing, which you perceive to be better as a, you know, that's, you know, your choice, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, they're both wrong.
They're both wrong, yeah. Yeah, no, this is a circus. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of a circus, Steve Ballmer had some regrets about not getting into hardware. What can you tell us about that?
This is not the first time he has gone up on a public stage and expressed this regret or other regrets about his time as Microsoft CEO. And this is a goofy comparison, but the thing that this reminded me of, I saw and read the beginning of an article, but I couldn't take it anymore. It was some kind of millennial type who went and saw Star Wars for the first time. And he wrote a story called something like, "I'm sorry, Star Wars fans, but you're crazy." You know, and the point of it was, this is a badly made movie. It's the acting is terrible, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't stand up to all the stuff he's used to today. Without understanding the context of this, which is that all the stuff you enjoy today, all of it, would not exist if it wasn't for Star Wars. Like, this is what kicked off the, you know, this entertainment world that we live in today. And in Steve Ballmer's case, what I mean by this is, you can sort of go back and say, well, God, I would have done this, I would have done this. But he inherited this world that was the world of Bill Gates, that was the most successful business model in personal technology. And they were right at the time to do what they were doing. Did they do it for too long? Did they not pursue, you know, other avenues of, you know, products or revenues or whatever? Maybe. But you know what? That's what every company does. I give Microsoft tons of credit for turning around in the time frame that they did. There are companies that don't exist anymore because they were not able to make these changes. When you did the ad for WordPress, as you said it, what went into my head was WordPerfect, an excellent example of a company that didn't move quickly enough to meet the challenges of a changing world. It's not fair to say that you would have gone back 10 years ago and started a world-class hardware company, because the Microsoft of that time frame would never have done that, or 15 years ago, whenever it was. It's just like, stop beating yourself up over this. You know, it's like we all have these regrets. Like, we all have things we would have done differently, but my God, like, who are you apologizing for? He did a great job. And you'll never find anyone who loves Microsoft more than that guy, period.
Totally. Period. And he, in some ways, he should be happy that Microsoft undid what he started doing, which was, he was the one who pushed for the Nokia purchase. Mm-hmm. And as we know, that did not end well. And supposedly, sure, based on a story that happened around that time, this was part of the reason he was,
Oh, really?
I wouldn't say forced out. Should I say forced out?
He was suggested.
Suggested that it might be time for him to no longer be CEO. It was all connected with what happened with Nokia and him pushing for Microsoft to be a hardware company.
Microsoft could not have done what they're doing right now under Steve Ballmer, because there would be too much of that old school element inside of Microsoft that would be unable to face this future. Give him a little bit of credit, you know, mobile first, cloud first, this thing that we're working with now, that started under him. He called it devices and services. Those are two phrases that say the exact same thing.
Pretty much,
Surface started under him, by the way, as well.
Right.
And he did start Windows Phone too. I mean, you know, we can make arguments about whether it was too late, whatever, but, you know, he did pull the trigger on all those decisions. So, you know, it's not like he came in and screwed up the company and left. He did a great job given the hand he was dealt. I think he played the right cards. But, you know, life happens. You can't – that Microsoft is even around today in the shape that they're in, I think is in large part because, you know, he did manage. He started this transition that they're on right now. He made that happen. I just hate to see him beating himself. It really bothers me that he went up publicly and he keeps doing this. Like, I don't understand. He has nothing to apologize for.
I'll let him know next time I talk to him.
Please do. Courtside at the Clippers game or whatever, wherever it is you see him.
Yeah. iOS and Android Outlook, you can now edit contacts. You couldn't do that before?
Yeah, Microsoft bought Acompli, and Acompli had this great app that became Outlook Mobile on Android and iOS. It's fantastic, pretty much across the board. But the one weird major feature that it doesn't have is the ability to edit contacts. That includes includes adding new contacts. There's some kind of system-level weirdness that's making this not work correctly, because even in this new version that's arriving soon, I think it's out on iOS today, and the Android version will be out soon, but there's still a weirdness between syncing those contacts between the app and the phone. And so if you think about, this gets into kind of a complex area, but you have a smartphone and you have, I'm going to manage my contacts in Outlook, you know, because I use Microsoft products, whatever. So you sign into your accounts, everything's in there, your contacts are in there, your calendar, your email. And then the phone rings and it has a phone number instead of the name of the contact, even though that phone number is tied to that contact in Microsoft Outlook, which is the app you're using. And the reason is that has to be in the system level contacts database for that phone number to turn into a name so that instead of 1781 whatever, it says Paul Thurrott or whatever, whoever's calling. And so the app has to integrate with the system for that to work. Right now, I actually work around that by just syncing my contacts to my, in the case of like iOS, I'll actually go into the settings interface and sign in my contacts only, right? So that my phone number will become a name. You know, I want that kind of a feature, but that kind of low level integration is at the heart of this problem, and they're trying to figure it out. And basically what they're going to do is have it's kind of like a one-way sync capability. If you, I don't want to make this too complex because I'm already having a hard time keeping this in my head, but just pretend you have one account and it's at outlook.com or some Microsoft thing. You're going to want to make sure that the contact information, the changes that you make, if you edit something, someone has a new phone number, whatever, it's, you always want that thing to be in the cloud. You don't want it to be locked onto your phone. And so they do have a one-way sync capability. But even after this app update goes out, it won't maintain this. You have to do it manually, and it only goes in one direction. And off the top of my head, I can't remember what that direction is. But I believe it is phone to app, not app to phone. So hopefully they'll give you the full meal deal at some point. But we have literally been waiting, I think, close to 2 years for them to do this. It's been a long time.
Mm. Well, Mary Jo says in her piece she switched to 9Mail. Which costs $9.99, which makes sense.
Okay, that's the name.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not just a witty name.
No, and it's from Nine Folders Incorporated.
Okay.
But she says it's an Outlook on Android alternative.
That does exactly what I just described. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, no one knows why Microsoft can't do this. It's very confusing.
We are going to talk about Skype. We're going to talk about what Apple's WWDC 2017 announcement means for Microsoft users. And of course, we've got tips and picks and some Project Scorpio news. But first, I want to thank the sponsor of this show, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you're listening to this, you are probably a geek like me and you like to throw technology at all problems or throw problems at technology. Either way, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans lets you do that with the problems of getting a mortgage. Digging through old paperwork and trying to figure out what the right mortgage for you is, getting all the figures right. With Rocket Mortgage, you can slide sliders and get approval for the mortgage that is exactly right for your financial situation, and you can do it in just minutes. And it comes from Quicken Loans, someone that you trust. So if you're in the market for a mortgage, try Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It's a mortgage experience that is keeping up with the times. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. They'll work with either of those. It's pretty simple. You can understand fully all the details and be confident that you are getting the right mortgage for you. You don't want the right mortgage for anyone else but you. It's convenient. They have trusted partners that allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button, and you're only sharing it with the right people, not the wrong people. It's powerful. So if you're looking to buy your first home or your 20th home, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, your assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that is right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. That's rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. So there's a new Skype on. Are you Skyping us from your Android phone?
I am not.
But you could.
You know what's funny? I've never used Skype on my phone, ever.
That's amazing.
I haven't either. And I read your story and I downloaded the app on my iPhone.
Yeah. I use it on my phone all the time.
Do you really? Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I never do is because I'm always scared if I start using Skype on my phone, it's going to ring there and my PC and my tablet everywhere.
Will. So I will do that.
Yeah. So I try not to use it there just to keep my ringing to a minimum. Okay. But anyway, Microsoft's starting to roll out an updated Skype client. consumer client, I should say, it looks very different from the Skype that we have now. It's way more colorful. It has nicer type fonts. See, I can see the design elements in this one because it's so different. It adds things that you can do like stickers and squiggles and all these kind of things. It's definitely meant to try to make Skype more appealing to millennials, I would say, and people who use Snapchat and WhatsApp and Messenger.
Right.
When I saw it, I didn't hate it. Like I was like, okay, it looks good. It looks nice. But because I don't use Skype on my phone, I'm like, I'm not that keen on it. And the part that I'm a little worried about is Microsoft is going to bring this same Skype client to Windows 10, the Mac, Linux, web, Xbox. It's going to come out everywhere. It's starting with Android and it's going to roll out to other platforms over time. So if you thought UWP, the UWP Skype client was kind of like a toy and a little too lightweight for you, this might make you go even crazier.
I'd like to see
but
the
I know
Skype
Paul
app.
Liked it. Paul likes it, which is
I know.
Astounding.
You think I would be the old guy on the porch yelling at the kids to get off of my lawn with their squiggles and their stickers, but I really like the typography. In fact, it's interesting. I'm looking at it right now because I'm literally going to keep bringing iOS up for this entire show. It reminds me of the new graphical style in some of Apple's new apps, like the News app, the Mail app. What other apps?
The App Store.
It's just got that kind of the App Store. Thank you. Where it has this kind of nice use of white space, big bold fonts. It's got a nice kind of professional look to it. Now, obviously, there's color going on and squiggles, and you can animate and all that kind of junk. I don't use that stuff almost ever. I pretty much just use it to bother Brad from time to time. But its existence doesn't offend me. You know, it doesn't. Just because I'm not going to use this stuff doesn't mean it can't be there. It's fine. I think them modernizing this and adapting to this world where Snapchat and apps like Snapchat are what messaging is for so many people is smart and necessary, you know, frankly.
Yeah, they're claiming this is the continuation, right, of the work that they started when they were taking Skype from a P2P backbone to Azure. They're saying this is the next step, that they were planning this all along, that they just didn't show it to us because it wasn't time, but now they're showing it.
Yep.
Oh, but we should bring up Skype for Business because this is interesting and odd, right? So everything we just said is about Skype Consumer. And so I asked Microsoft when I talked to them about Skype for Business. I'm like, okay, so are you going to do something similar for Skype for Business? It doesn't seem like the right UI.
And squiggles.
Right. Yep. And they said, we have no comment on what's next for Skype for Business in terms of anything. Like, we're not talking about Skype for Business. And they did say to me that, by the way, Skype Consumer and Microsoft Teams are now on the same backbone. And so my next question, of course, was, okay, so that does that mean Teams replaces Skype for Business? And they said no comment.
Because the alternative, by the way, is Microsoft creates group policies to prevent people from using squiggles.
Right,
and I don't think anybody wants that. You know what I'm saying?
No sprinkles.
How come the sprinkles aren't working in my app?
Yeah. Well, right, Microsoft
corporate Teams, policy turned it off.
Teams has some of those sticker squiggle features too, right?
Mm-hmm. They do.
Oh, and I'm sure there are group policies that prevent you from doing them if that's what you want.
I think you should add some of these features to Windows Weekly. Like, you know, if you wanted to respond in some way, just respond with penguin stickers.
I would like there to be a confetti.
You.
There we go.
It's Fred. It's always
maybe
there.
Maybe like a confetti effect that rains down.
Yeah. I think Alex has some of those in his pocket. We don't need.
I need the imaginary gong so I don't have to ring my real gong. I could just put up a gong sticker.
Right. Like from a kung fu movie or something.
Yeah.
I want to play whack-a-mole with Brad's face.
There we go. Look at that. That looked nice.
So we should mention that Skype support is ending on some devices.
Yes. Windows legacy devices. Yeah. I got a panicked email because people had seen the Windows Phone 8, Windows Phone 8.1, I think if you read that quickly, it might look like Windows 8.1, Windows 8. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? The vast majority of Windows devices out in the world are still running Windows 7. And, you know, there are a bunch running Windows 8, whatever. They're not going to, they can't kill Skype on these platforms, right? What they are doing is killing the Skype apps that are never going to be updated to this new infrastructure that Mary Jo was alluding to. These new clients run on this new infrastructure. And for a little bit of time there, they've been keeping both of the underlying infrastructures online, but eventually the old one's going away and those old clients won't work anymore. So they're going to disappear.
And what is this?
Windows 10 Mobile is on that list, right? And
is it?
Okay, I know. There's only, 1% market share for Windows 10 Mobile, but I was kind of surprised about that one.
Well, they did brick all of them last week, Mary Jo, so I guess it doesn't matter anymore.
That's true.
Too soon? Too soon.
I mean, I guess this means, well, you know, so this is confusing. So they said the new Skype client is coming to Windows 10 UWP. Mm-hmm. Is there already a Skype UWP for Windows Phone is the question. And if it is, does that mean they do get the new experience?
Right. I think they do. Actually, I think that's, okay. I think the Skype app on I don't use it, but I mean, I think the Skype app on Windows 10 Mobile is this Skype UWP app. Yeah.
Yeah. So Windows 10 Mobile will still be supported, but not with this legacy app that's going away.
Right.
So Apple's Developers Conference was on Monday, WWDC, lots of great announcements. One of my favorite headlines, besides your headlines, was from Matt Weinberger in Business Insider. And he said, Apple is trying to become Microsoft faster than Microsoft can become Apple. Basically, I mean, he's talking about all the new file system. I guess you don't call it files in iOS 11, trying to turn the iPad into more of a productivity device. Who wants to take this one?
Well, I mean, this is something I've been watching for a long time. And this notion, I've talked about this a lot, that Microsoft is trying to make its devices and its operating system simpler. Apple has this popular mobile OS that it's trying to make more sophisticated. And eventually they're going to kind of meet in the middle somewhere functionality wise. The question is, which of those two strategies makes the most sense? Neither one of them has a choice, because on Apple's side, the mobile thing is what's popular. On Microsoft's side, the kind of complex PC-based OS is what's popular. So that's their hand. You know, how are they going to play it and how does it work? And I've made the argument over time that it's much easier to improve a simple system than it is to make a complex, difficult thing easier and less complex, right? It's just really hard to do that. Windows 10S is a great example of what that looks like. It's hard to do. But that said, you know, Apple introduced the iPad Pro almost 2 years ago, and it's kind of been treading water ever since. Like, it really didn't have a lot of those sophisticated productivity features that people either need or expect, because they're just used to the way Macs and PCs work. There is an argument to be made. Harry McCracken wrote about this recently. We saw him. I don't know if you noticed this, Mary Jo, but we did see him at Build, and he works on an iPad Pro. And he wrote about that, and he said, you know, a lot of people kind of question it because how could you possibly get work done? And he's a writer. I can get lots of work done on this thing. You just have to change the way you do things, and that can be hard. So with this version, finally, 2 years into this, Apple is adding some new features and some improved multitasking features in particular that make iOS on an iPad Pro more sophisticated. And this is the serious threat to the PC in general, to Microsoft Surface, that I've always sort of envisioned Apple doing. And I think this is the first version where maybe it's getting there and could possibly be a viable solution for a lot of people, which is why it's in the notes. It's worth discussing. And so I'm going to test one and see. I'm very curious about this. But, you know, Google has tried to do this with Chromebook and Android apps. They tried to do it half-heartedly with, like, say, the Google Pixel C tablet, which is sort of a two-in-one device. They've not had much success with the Android stuff. But I feel like both these companies, Apple and Google, have a good shot at coming up with a viable PC competitor using a much simpler platform. And I think that will appeal to a lot of people. So this is kind of it. You know, it's the new iPad Pro comes out next week, iOS 11 doesn't come out till September. So there's still, it's basically 2 years from the time they announced the original iPad Pro is how long this has taken. And it's not going to be there completely. Like, it still doesn't support a trackpad or anything like that, obviously. But, you know, if you can make a couple of minor adjustments, I actually think this is a viable replacement, finally.
You can download the developer version of iOS, mm-hmm. and then there'll be a public beta, I think, before later this summer. Yeah. I'll probably try that. I mean, there's drag and drop, you know, there's files in the list, and I'm really excited about that. But I'm of two minds with this, because I've been using the Surface Book, and immediately then when I go back to my MacBook, I'm touching it, and it's so annoying.
You miss things that aren't there. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I realize I do think Apple's onto something, really keeping them separate until they've perfected the iOS, really keeping, you know, not making one operating system. It just seems like when Microsoft first said, you know, it's going to be across all the devices, Windows Mobile, that was really exciting to me, but it was just a mess.
Yeah.
So. The other thing Apple showed off, it was not Photoshop as we know it. It was some other app, but it might have even been a different Adobe app. I don't remember. But there was a beautifully complex and full-featured photo editing something that they showed off that was super high-density controls and very professional-looking. And, you know, that's exactly the kind of application that Microsoft has never been able to get going on UWP. And that was running on an iPad. You know, it's... this is a problem, and I think people are, you know, kind of doing this thing on the Windows side. Like, this is not happening. It's not happening. It's not happening. It's like, guys, this is happening. I mean, thankfully, Apple prices things very high, so it's not a mainstream solution by any stretch of the imagination. But this is the first one, I think, where the threat is real.
And then, of course, there's the Surface Studio, the threat to the Surface Studio with the iMac Pro. How much does the Surface Studio cost?
$3,000 to $5,000, depending on the model. But it's a much lower end computer than that iMac, right? Now, it does have those touch capabilities and a pen, and, you know, of course, the screen comes down and all that stuff. But it's hard. It's basically a quad core laptop inside. It's not, doesn't have dedicated graphics of any kind. It doesn't, let alone the, what are they talking, 12 to 18 core Xeon processor. I mean,
a billion teraflops. Lots of teraflops.
Yep. It's a legitimate workstation class computer. You know, it's a high end computer. I don't actually believe that the professional market is all that interested in all in one computers. I think both of these things would be better served by a pizza box with a screen you could remove. But, you know, what do I know? The world's changing, and I'm on my porch and I'm yelling at the kids. I don't know.
The other announcement from WWDC was that you could have access to the Files app. Yeah. And so OneDrive will have access to the Files app as well, not just...
Yeah, they didn't really do this in the keynote, but it's extensible. So on Apple's website, they actually do show Box and I think Dropbox integrated into this app. Microsoft announced explicitly, we will be supporting it with OneDrive. And presumably Google Drive, whatever other services, anyone should be able to plug into it. And that's exactly the right way to do that, because... you know, the old-fashioned way to do things with files is you put them on your computer or your device and you access them locally. And the new-fashioned way is to sync stuff through a cloud service. And being able to access your files no matter where they are, through this app or through any other apps now, is makes tons of sense. It's a really good idea.
So, Mary Jo, would you ever try an iPad again?
No.
Well, I see.
We saw today, because Paul tweeted this, I'm now a known Google fangirl.
That's right.
Yeah, known Paul, to Google, Paul anyway. Said Google actually recommended me to him through the Google Play newsstand. It's like suggested topics based on your interests: Microsoft Surface, Google I/O, Google Photos, and Mary Jo Foley.
I know.
I'm like, huh, okay. I guess they finally figured out, like, I am the poster child for an Android phone. So, no, I'm not going to the Apple ecosystem. I'm I'm all in with Google on the phone and Microsoft and everything else.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You have standards. I respect that.
I do.
Yeah. That's what's important to have standards. I don't, I mean, by the way, I don't, I'm not switching to an iPad or anything, obviously, but I am curious. I mean, and I have a very specific workflow, but I also have very specific needs when it comes to the types of applications that I use and the types of things that I do. You know, you, Mary Jo and I are very similar in that sense, although we use different apps. Could I do a lot of what I do on this thing? I'm guessing the answer is yes. And but I think where it's going to fall apart a little bit is going to be in the fact, well, the graphic editing capabilities and, you know, bringing images into the website and so forth is probably going to be a little ham-handed. And then, oh, I write about Microsoft stuff. So that kind of precludes, you know, me from using an iPad full time. But
you said you would try it.
I will try.
There's so many Microsoft apps for iOS now, right? You could review them.
Yeah, no, and you, speaking of ecosystems, I mean, on my iPhone, on my Android phone, I use a lot of Microsoft apps and services, right? I mean, I have certain preferences. We've been talking recently about Google, and Google Photos is so great and everything, but I back everything up to OneDrive as well. All of my work-related documents go through OneDrive, and you know, that's available everywhere. I don't typically need ever to access my work documents on my phone, but if I ever needed to, if I was ever out in the world, I could get to any file within minutes. It would be pretty easy.
I'm laughing because you said, if I was ever out in the world, like you never go out.
If I ever left my house.
Well, I don't know if you've noticed this gray prison thing that I'm living in, but yeah, the only thing that's missing is like the door with the, you know, the bars on it that slammed shut.
So E3 is coming up, the gaming conference. Will we see Xbox in VR?
No. That's that. No, actually, so yeah, Mary Jo, you added something to this, didn't you?
I did. I said, I'm not going to be watching the Project Scorpio reveal this Sunday, even though it's going to be in 4K. I will not be watching that because it doesn't really pertain to my audience. But Microsoft's broadcasting it, and they've been putting out some teasers about this. Tom Warren was looking at one of the teasers, and I don't know if he zoomed in or somebody zoomed in to one of these big crowd scene teasers, and there's a date embedded on a clock in there that makes it possible that that Xbox Scorpio could be out October 13th.
That makes sense.
That could be the release.
That would be a good date for that. And it's a Friday.
October 13th is part of the Scorpio zodiac period, I believe, isn't it?
Jeez. I think you're right.
I mean, when they name the Scorpio, I'm like, okay, that's the clue of when this comes out, right?
Interesting. They've shifted the zodiac because when I was born, I was a Scorpio, but I might be something different now because of the way it's changed or something like that. But it used to be end of October through the middle of November.
No, so October 13th is not. October 23rd to November 21 is the Scorpio dates. So if it does come out the 13th, it's before that.
Well, yeah, it's close enough.
So much for that theory, but yeah. What else do you think they're going to show there? I mean, okay, so they're going to, what haven't they revealed, right?
Well, they haven't shown off the actual console, what it's going to look like.
Right.
I expect it to look an awful lot like an Xbox One S, frankly. And they haven't shown off the name.
No, right.
And so I think they announced that stuff. Pricing has not been announced. That's obviously a big deal. The dates, like, we're guessing is then. You know, E3, there's a weird thing about everything in tech, frankly, but when it comes to gaming, there's a lot of these people who become kind of purists about something arbitrary, like E3 is only about games. You know, we shouldn't be talking about hardware. I don't understand that, but okay, whatever. I think a big part of this, because of that kind of attitude, will be about the games. And I think that's awesome. You know, hopefully what they'll do is a little bit of side-by-side stuff. Here's how this awesome game looks on the Xbox One S. It looks great. Oh, look, here's what it looks like on Project Scorpio, whatever they're calling it. The other thing, though, is the VR thing is a little confusing to me because we already knew that this wasn't happening until next year. And Alex Kipman, I think in an interview with Polygon, basically said, look, we're not going to talk about this at E3. It's something for next year. But then he kind of dropped a little bit of new information. He said, you know, we sort of feel like on consoles, VR, it's VR, not MR, for one thing. And it needs to be wireless. And wait, what? You know, so that's interesting to me. And it makes me wonder now if that partner strategy we've been talking about, where those mixed reality headsets that are coming out this year for PCs will work on Xbox One and Xbox Scorpio. I'm actually now wondering if they're not just going to do a first party device and just do the one thing, like Sony has, you know, PlayStation VR. Microsoft will have whatever they call it, Xbox VR. And that maybe they're thinking it doesn't make sense to make this compatible with a lot of third party stuff. Because that's the how consoles work, right? Usually, you know, I mean, well, it's not how they always work, but something, you know, you don't buy Kinects from different companies, right? You buy Microsoft's Kinect. You do buy controllers from different companies, though. So it's not a perfect comparison.
You know what's weird about him saying that about VR is one of the concepts of Windows is the same everywhere is the holographic shell is on everything, right? So the operating system inside Scorpio, it's going to be Windows 10, right? And it's going to have the holographic shell in it. So you would think that would mean mixed reality, not
virtual reality. I know. He was very specific that it was VR, but I think he was... So I have a theory about this, by the way. I actually think that the next gen version of the Windows mixed reality platform, whatever it's called, will support wireless headsets. I think that's going to be Gen 2. And I think that will be, for whatever reason, that's what they're supporting on the console. But I think those, that type of thing will be available on Windows as well. It was interesting that he even said this. Like, I don't know what the point of mentioning it was, but.
Yeah. I guess throwing a bone to people who may have forgotten that they still are doing this and it's not going to be till next year. I don't know.
Right.
So speaking of E3, your tip of the week, Paul, is about how to watch E3.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to bring up the list to get this right off the, because I can't remember this off the top of my head. But Microsoft is streaming its E3 press conference live, and you can watch that Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. In three different places, they're going to offer it in 4K. So the official Xbox Mixer channel, which is on the web, the Mixer app, formerly Beam, on Xbox One, or the YouTube, however you get YouTube. If you can get a 4K capable YouTube display somewhere, you can actually watch this in 4K. So that's pretty cool. It's going to be on the Xbox Twitch channel. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook Live. It's going to be on cable, on the Fuse channel, which I don't know if I even get. And it's going to be at Microsoft Store. So if you live near a retail store, you can go down. They'll have little goofy events there, and you can watch it live in the store if you want to. They're making it pretty accessible, I have to say. It's kind of interesting. It's clearly a big deal.
And also Games with Gold, is that something?
Yeah, so this is just every month I just kind of remind people about this because it's the beginning of the month. Microsoft just unleashed four more free games for Xbox gamers, especially people on Xbox One. Actually, there's a fifth choice this month. That doesn't usually happen, but... looking through the list, I actually did grab one of these already. Yeah, Assassin's Creed 3, for example, is an Xbox 360 game that is normally $20. And if you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription, you can get it now for free. And it works on Xbox One as well as Xbox 360. So just a reminder, you know, every month we get four new games, and those are available now.
And your app pick, Groove?
Yeah. Yep. I'm sorry. I feel like I missed something there.
did I miss something?
Nope. Mary Jo is a huge fan of Groove and of the new Fluent user experience. And so on your Windows 10 PCs now, you can actually access the new version of the app that has those effects. And it's a little subtle in some ways, like you were saying, but you can really see it when you move over other things, like in that photo you're showing on the screen now. You can see how the background image on the desktop bleeds through at the top, and then the white from the notepad window bleeds through at the bottom. And as you move that thing around, the effect is a little more interesting. It also goes opaque when this window is not in focus. I don't have a picture of that, but if this app were in the background, that menu on the left would look a lot like it does in previous versions of Groove. It just looks opaque. But the effect there is not, it's not a simple translucency. And this is that real world object coming into 2D space kind of thing where they're actually using a light source to kind of bleed through in an acrylic kind of a look and feel. And there'll be different materials that they add over time as well. But the other thing that's going on is a kind of a mouse over effect. And they describe this back at Build, but it's kind of interesting because today you can mouse over elements in the user interface on, you know, Mac or Windows or whatever, and things highlight as they go over the mouse, as the mouse goes over them. You know, for example, a button might display a border to indicate that, hey, this is something you can press. But because this thing uses light to make the, it's artificial light, but it's kind of like a fake light source, that it doesn't just give you the button border of the button that you're over. It also gives you a partial border to the next button down in this case, because it's so close, the light source kind of hits it just a little bit. And what that is about is just making it seem a little bit more like a real world object. Because when light impacts things in the real world, it's not, you don't shine a light on the one thing, you know, the light bleeds over to the other stuff a little bit as well. And it gives you kind of a sense of context or space. Hopefully Mary Jo's not falling asleep. But I really,
I listened to this and I'm like, I would never ever notice this. I really would not. Yeah. If somebody said, wow, doesn't it look different? I'd be like,
is absolutely, it's subtle. I agree. It's subtle. But you know, the first things that they're rolling out for this Fluent system are by and large pretty subtle, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And just as a bonus pick, we already talked about it, but that new Skype app is available on Android and iOS. And all I'm going to say is it has squiggles and my God, you have to get this thing. It's awesome.
Does it have sprinkles or just squiggles?
No, it has stickers and squiggles, but not sprinkles.
Ah, ooh.
I think.
So I just signed up for the 1 month music pass for Groove.
Oh, jeez. I'm so sorry.
So you guys have to remind me to unsubscribe after the month. Okay. That's your responsibility.
Okay. All right.
And do you listen to it on your iPhone, Paul?
Yeah. Actually, the Groove app is available pretty much everywhere. It's on iOS and Android. It is on the Xbox and it is not on the web. Actually, it used to be on the web, but it's not on the web anymore. But obviously,
really?
It's on the
I thought the web player is still there now.
I think it's gone, but I could be, let me look. I'll look while you do your thing. I thought it was gone. Music.microsoft.com.
So do you also listen to, do you subscribe to anything else, Paul?
Yeah, I actually subscribe to all kinds. Yeah, actually, I apologize. There is a web player. My mistake. Yeah, my kids all use Spotify and I actually also use Google Play Music. I'm kind of in a transition here, so. I usually keep a bunch of things going because I need to test, you know, when new features come in, you compare it, you know, blah, 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 whatever. So mm-hmm. I usually use multiple things, you know, for photos, for music, for videos, you know, whatever.
So, well, we're grooving, Mary Jo. Mm-hmm. What's the enterprise pick of the week?
So the enterprise pick is the Microsoft Ignite Session Catalog. It seems a long way away, but it's not really. Ignite, which is Microsoft's IT Pro and Enterprise show, is coming up September 25th through 29th in Orlando. They just published, I think a day ago, the session catalog. So this isn't everything that they're going to talk about at the show, but it's the list of topics that you would expect. Security, productivity, deployment, IT and cloud infrastructure. Lots about Skype for Business there, which will be interesting. Data, so lots about SQL Server Next, which will be coming out right around that time. Data management and machine learning and AI. So all the big topics that they talk about often with their business customers. You can now go check out 307 sessions in the session catalog. So that's part of the enterprise pick. I also wanted to just remind people that the Office 365 Engage show is coming up in a couple weeks in Harlem in the Netherlands. And Paul and I are both going to be there. We're going to be speaking there. And we're also going to be doing Windows Weekly Live at our usual time from the show. So if you're at the show, you can just join us and be in the audience. We're going to have some cool demos there possibly at the show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be also having a meetup right before Windows Weekly starts. So we're going to have our meetup before the actual show because of the time difference.
We're going to be in great shape by the time the show starts.
We're going to be in great shape for the show. Yeah. So that's the week after next. And if you're anywhere in the vicinity of Harlem and you want to come to the show, I believe you can still buy a ticket to come. And it should be really interesting. I've seen the session list for that one. And if you do anything with Office 365, you will want to go to this because it's not just all the same talks you've heard everywhere about Office 365. It's more about real world problems and solutions and deployments. So should be really good if you're an Office 365 person.
Emily in the chat room wants to know if normal people can go.
It's a great question.
Yeah, I know. We don't know the answer to that yet, do we?
Oh. Yeah. So the goal is we should figure out a way to make that happen. Like, I think we want to do that, obviously. So we get 2 weeks to figure that out. I'll ask George about this again. Okay. I think the plan is to is for people to be able to come in and see the show. And we're having a meetup as well. What are we going to do? We can't just have a meetup with people at the show.
The meetup's inside the venue, so...
it seems like people should be able to come in. Yeah, I think that's the plan. But I'll ping George and make sure that's the case.
Okay, great.
All right, and there's a rumor of the week. This is exciting. Is Microsoft disbanding DX?
Right. So this is something that kind of was tipped during build, but on the last day of the show and in the last paragraph of a long blog post about something else. So Steve Guggenheimer, who runs the DX part of Microsoft, which is a developer evangelism group, he told us when we were at build that he was going to be taking on a new role. He's going to be working with Harry Shum in the AI and research organization. But what he didn't tell us when he talked to us there, but he put at the very end of his blog post is DX, as we know it, is being revamped completely, reorged and revamped. So Guggenheimer says that he gave the names of a number of people who will be leading different pieces of what used to be DX. And he said, I look forward to seeing what's happening as these people onboard the teams that previously comprised DX. So this to me says DX is going away, which is kind of interesting. And that these new teams, there's a team for ISV outreach and there's an engineering team under John Shuchuk. There's Charlotte Yarkoni who does some things around cloud evangelism. All of these people are going to be getting the people who work in DX dispersed among them, I believe. I'm not hearing there any layoffs as
like
part of this.
Scattered to the winds is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there are about 500 people who work in DX. It's not a gigantic team at Microsoft, but it's still a frontline team where they do a lot of things about like partner outreach and customer outreach, technical marketing and sales. So these people are very visible in their roles. So it's going to be, I'm very interested to see what Microsoft's doing here and why they're doing this. I don't know the why yet, but I think we'll hear more about this probably at their Inspire Partner Conference in Washington, D.C. in July. So that's the rumor of the week.
Mm. Yeah. And the beer pick of the week. Are we ready for that yet?
I think we're ready.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is not a beer technically that is the pick this week. It's a mead. So mead is a fermented beverage made with honey and honey and water fermented together. And usually when I've had meads in the past, they're super high alcohol content and they're really sweet because of the honey. So one of our Windows Weekly listeners, Stefan Vitry, hand carried over from London for me two meads from Gosnells. One of them is called Citrus Sea Mead. And if you know what a goes beer is, which is a very light beer that has a salty finish, this tastes a lot like that, except it's a mead. It's hopped with Citra hops. It has a salty finish. And it was only like 5% alcohol. It really just changed my whole mind about meads. I thought I didn't like meads. But now after I drank this, I'm like, oh, there are some meads that I would like. And they would be good with food. They're not just like this crazy sweet honey thing. So if you have a chance to try any of the Gosnells meads, they have a London mead and a dry hopped mead and a bunch of others. They are very good and I would recommend them.
I like the sound of a salty finish.
Oh, it's good. It's really good. Yeah.
All right. What did we miss?
I just heard back from George. Everyone is allowed to come. It's going to be open. So if you want to come to the Windows Weekly meetup or to the live taping of the show, you can do so. They do have to get a name badge at the door. They'll have a process for that for security reasons. But anyone can come.
Awesome. Okay, so now I have the Surface Book. What should I do with it? What can I do with it that I can't do with my MacBook Pro?
Okay, so there's a button in the upper right that has a I don't know if the light's on, but it should have a light, maybe. Or maybe it, all right, so the upper... let me grab mine so I tell you the exact button.
Upper right of the keyboard or the screen?
Yeah, the upper right of the keyboard.
Okay.
And it's the second one in, I think. Yeah, the second one in from the right.
Okay.
If you press that, you can detach the screen and use it like a tablet.
Yes, I figured that out. I did figure that out, and I will use it as a tablet. I'm not an artist. Will it make me one?
Yes. Yes. Okay. For that much money, actually, it includes a full year at the Art Institute of your choice.
Okay. And then it just goes right back in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I can do with it that I can't do with my MacBook Pro?
I know. I mean, the pen works as well. You can touch the screen.
Yes, I've got the pen, and I love that the pen sticks to the side as opposed to my Apple Pencil, which gets lost. Mm-hmm. But then when you stick this in a laptop bag, it sometimes comes off.
Yeah.
It always
comes. So I guess on the new devices, they're making the magnets incredibly more powerful.
Mm. Like this. My Apple Pencil doesn't do this, the click to do things.
Yeah, and you're launching an app when you do that, by the way.
Right. But you can customize it to do whatever you want, right?
Yep, that's right.
I can customize it to stop me from
talking. Yeah, somewhere in Germany, some woman's lights are going on and off every time you do that.
Well, Mary Jo and Paul, thank you. It is always a pleasure. I feel honored to get to spend this hour and a half with both of you and begin my Windows journey.
Well, good luck on that journey.
I know that sounded sarcastic, but it wasn't. I have fun here. So I'll be back next week, too, you email and call Leo in Peru and ask him kindly not to have me back ever again.
Well, that's highly unlikely, but...
Well, Mary Jo, is there anything else that you're working on? Anything we should point people to that they need to see?
No, I'm mostly working on getting over my jet lag from my trip, which is going pretty well. Some days better than others.
Just in time to go on another trip.
I know. Just in time to go the opposite direction from where I just came.
So all about Microsoft at Mary Jo Foley on Twitter. Paul, what are you working on?
If I can stomach it, because it's Sunday night, I might do like a live Twitter thing for the Xbox event. I don't want to promise that, but I'm gonna try to. Oh, wait a minute. No, I think I can probably do that. We're gonna drive to Pennsylvania this weekend, but I should be able to do that.
Do it in the car. Do it in Skype.
Do it in the car.
iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, man. I should be back by before then. Yeah.
Well, Paul at Therot.com, Therot at Therot on Twitter, Therot.com on the web. Check out all the content that both of you write weekly. And thanks so much for doing the show. And thank you for watching Windows Weekly every Wednesday. Every Wednesday. But you, of course, don't have to wait till Wednesday. You can watch it whenever you want. You'll have to wait till Wednesday for the new show. But subscribe to the show at twit.tv on the Windows Weekly page or wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe there and tune in next week. You'll have the three of us again. Thanks so much for watching Windows Weekly.